New technologies have made finding your ancestors a very popular hobby. And for those who don't know who their parents are, these new methods are a great tool for helping them find their roots. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. To help explain how you can utilize these new DNA tools in your research, Mary Eberle is with us again. She's an experienced genetic genealogist and a DNA expert. She also is the owner of DNA Hunters, which, among other things, helps clients understand their DNA test results. Have you had your DNA tested? What questions do you have about the results? If you'd like more information, give us a call. Our phones are kind of not quite working, maybe working right now, but the number jotted down, 800-642-1234, and the email is definitely working. So send those questions via ideas@wpr.org. Okay, so hopefully we'll get those phones up soon. Give it a try. What's happening is when you call, we may not be able to hear you. So be patient with us. We're working on it. Mary, it's so good to see you again.
Thanks, Jill. Good to see you.
Now, you've been with us a couple of times talking about DNA testing for ancestry, but this time we wanted to kind of focus in just a little bit on how people who don't know who their parents are find them. Now, your company, that's one of the things they specialize in, right?
That's right.
So how does DNA help with that?
It helps because people get their DNA test results back, and like anyone, they receive cousin matches, and then the cousin matches hopefully we'll have trees, and then we're looking for overlap in the trees to see who the shared ancestors are, and we're building the trees back in time to those shared ancestors, and then forward in time to find the birth parents, or
okay,
potential birth parents.
Now, I mean, I imagine that comes into privacy issues. I imagine you run into that a lot. So how is that looked at?
Right, right. And that has been in the news quite a bit lately.
Right, yeah.
So we have privacy issues with respect to the test taker. Sometimes we're asking other people to test because a birth parent is deceased and we need to have their offspring or their grandchild test. And so we're having to let them know that they will be in the database. There are certain ways to hide test results, mm-hmm, in certain databases. Mm-hmm. And then we also now know that law enforcement is using some of the databases.
Right. And that's the first thing when I told people I was talking about DNA, they're like, oh, I don't want that done because I'm afraid, you know, someone's going to, I'm like, well, if you didn't do anything, I mean, I guess you're okay. But mm-hmm. So does that happen real often? I mean, we hear about the big cases, but does that happen a lot?
Well, actually, just last week in Wisconsin, a criminal suspect was identified in a 43-year-old double murder and rape.
Wow.
So it does happen. Wow. And now it just happened here for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not that the criminal himself or herself is in the database. It's much more likely that their first cousin or second cousin,
sure,
or third cousin is,
sure,
in the database.
Yeah. It's magical. I mean, it really is. I had mine tested. And when Mary was here last time with Larry, my DNA results didn't come back because we were going to talk about the two of them. I got a message that said I didn't have enough DNA in the sample, so I had to redo it. Is that something that people get a lot, or was I just special?
I wouldn't say a lot, but you know, the nice thing is that if the test fails, they'll, mm-hmm, send you a brand new kit, and
right,
you can do it over.
Yes.
You know, unfortunately, you have to wait the 4 to 6
yeah,
weeks again,
yeah,
for your results.
It took me 6 months to actually get my results.
Oh,
but
my.
Yeah, we went in January, which I know that's a lot. It's popular because people give these as Christmas gifts. But yeah, I did July. So it took a while to get that. So I'm glad I'm not the, you know, only one, but that it does happen not too often. So that's good. Have you had a lot of success with using DNA to find parents? Has that been good for you?
Yes. Yes. I just heard statistics last week that said that about 90% of people in this country will be able to find birth parents if,
wow,
they test. You know, it depends upon their heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because the databases consist primarily of people of Northwestern European descent.
Right, right.
So if you if you're not of some, you know, Western European descent,
mm-hmm,
you probably will have fewer matches. If you have very deep U.S. colonial roots, then you probably will have like tens of thousands of matches.
Oh, my goodness.
And the databases are just growing exponentially.
Yeah.
So I believe Ancestry has about 15 million people in their database, and overall about 22 million people have tested.
That is, it's amazing. It really is. Now, you, before we go too far, I wanted to mention that you are going to be presenting a couple of workshops with the Wisconsin Historical Society, which relate to this. So why don't you tell us about those?
Right. We have an all-day long DNA workshop through the Wisconsin Historical Society, and it's held at Memorial Library here on campus, and it's on April 6th, starting at 9 a.m., and you can sign up through the Wisconsin Historical Society. And there will be four talks about DNA and about even it might be possible for you to find out who your birth parents are just by requesting your birth certificate. So we'll talk about whether that's possible. It's based on state law, so
sure.
It just depends.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go through interpreting DNA results, the best places to test, the different DNA tests that are available, and then how to interpret your results.
Yeah, that should be really a popular one. So you definitely want to get on their website and do that. If you want, you can go straight to the Historical Society, and I think you go under genealogy and you can sign up there. We also have a link on our program note on WPR.org/Larry. So you can get a direct link there also. Now, when I was there, I saw, do you have another one in May?
No.
Oh, I wonder what that was about.
Maybe that's the legal genealogist,
Judy Russell.
Oh, maybe
that could be. I thought it was the same, but that's okay. April 6th is the one you want to remember. The Historical Society also has a bunch of other ones coming up, so check those out too. So if you're interested in this, this is very helpful. And they have certainly lots of things that you can use at their in their facility to help with that too. So let's get to the important thing, my test. I'm just kidding. We're kind of using the one that I did as a basis for jumping off to help people who have taken the Ancestry test. And before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what different tests are out there for, you know, testing DNA.
Sure. Well, we have different types of DNA to test.
Mm-hmm.
It started out with Y-DNA, which is a kind of DNA that men have and that men pass on to their sons.
Okay.
There's also mitochondrial DNA, which women pass on to their children. So both male and female children receive mitochondrial DNA from their mothers. And then we have autosomal DNA, and that is inherited from both parents. So 50% from each parent and roughly 25% from each grandparent.
Okay. And then there are companies that will test this DNA. And who are those? I mean, I know there's a lot now.
Right, right. We have Ancestry, which tests the autosomal DNA.
Okay.
We have 23andMe. You've mm-hmm. probably seen them
advertising.
Oh, yeah,
they advertise, yeah.
FamilyTree DNA. And now MyHeritage has a DNA test, and Living DNA.
Okay. And all of those you've had experiences with and are all reputable?
Right. Those okay. are reputable. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. There are definitely ones out there that are not reputable.
Okay. So watch where, if it's a really cheap price, you're probably got to be questioning it, I would assume, right?
Okay. Right. I mean, okay. the big companies do have sales. So we just went through a St. Patrick's Day sale. And
yeah, I saw that, right? Because especially everybody wants to be Irish on St. Patrick's Day. So now you can prove it.
Right? That's right.
So I got mine, like I said, to use as an example, I've got mine back. I kind of looked at it. It was, you know, oh, this is interesting. But I didn't delve too much into it until just this morning, actually. And I was like, oh my gosh, there is so much information there. I was just shocked. So let's just see, you know, the DNA result summary, which is the ethnicity estimate, is probably the one that people tend to be the most interested in, and which is right in your face. And I don't know if you got a chance to look at mine at all, but I printed it out for Mary to look. And mine, again, like you were saying, it's mostly Eastern European, or it's all that. But a lot of it's overlapping, too. So explain a little bit about what you see when you look at a summary of Ancestry.com.
On the ethnicity estimates, they have labels for different categories.
Right.
So, for example, Eastern European and Russia, France, Baltic states, that kind of thing. But they also have a map. And it's really important to look at that map because the title of the category might be different than the map.
Okay.
And sometimes we're looking at the results and we think, oh my gosh, this isn't right. For example, mine says I'm 8% Irish, and while that's good for St. Paddy's Day, if I didn't know any better, I would say that's wrong. But when I look at the map, I see that what they mean by Irish includes Western England, and actually that's where my ancestors are from. So when I understand that, then I say these are right.
Okay. So you can actually click on those different categories, and it will open it up the map closer so you can see where those little, not really circles, but yeah, areas are.
Correct.
And so they're kind of as a center, but they go out.
Correct.
So, okay. I noticed that when I went on there this time from July, that my estimates changed percentages. Why is that happening?
In September of last year, Ancestry updated the algorithm they use to analyze your results.
Okay.
And then they also changed the way in which they analyze them. Historically, it was kind of like putting your results into a blender and just
okay.
kind of looking at them randomly in tiny pieces. But today, they use more of what we call a boxcar analysis. So they're looking at bigger pieces, and that tends to be more accurate.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So this is going to be more accurate than what I had before.
Right, and that also shifted the time frame to be closer to our paper trail, meaning our family tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they added in more reference populations from Africa and Asia.
Oh, okay.
So that, you know, that helps a lot of people to
I'll bet.
A better reference panel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. And then they also give you some other ones where you're going to be, they show you like my ancestors went to certain parts of the U.S. So where do they get that information from? Is that again Family Tree?
That part is actually from the family tree in part, and it's also from the DNA.
Okay.
So these populations that came over to the New World together settled in areas, and those people who settled there tended to share DNA.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. It also gives dates of when that migration took place, too.
Right. And it might not be exact for your family,
right.
But in general, it's probably the largest migration.
Okay, great. Well, we are talking with Mary Eberle. She is an experienced genetic genealogist and a DNA expert. And she's been working with the field of DNA for a good 30 years. Her business is DNA Hunters, and she can help you find your parents or people that are in your family tree. Do you have questions? Give us a call. Hopefully our lines will be working, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, ideas@wpr.org. And we do have a couple of people that did send emails, and we'll be talking about those after we get back from the news, which is coming up next. So please stay with us, and we'll be back with you as right after that. Thanks. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about using DNA to trace your roots with our guest, Mary Eberle. She's an experienced genetic genealogist and a DNA expert, and she's the owner of DNA Hunters. You can join the conversation with your DNA testing questions by calling 1-800-642-1234, and it looks like we might have found the problem and the phones are working right now. But you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Mary, let's just go to one of those emails that we got, a listener email that she had, or he had their DNA done along with his siblings that were tested. And to their surprise, they discovered at 60 years old that his father was not his biological father, and his siblings were half brothers and half sisters. It was an extreme shock. I'll bet that happens a lot, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And this is something to keep in mind also if you're asking someone else to test. So you might ask your cousin that you haven't seen for a while, would you like to test? But then, you know, you have to consider what happens if that,
right.
you know, it turns out their parent isn't their parent. And also we need to let them know about the law enforcement aspect.
Oh, so that's right.
To provide
that's right.
informed consent.
So be prepared to be surprised.
Right.
If you're going to go start doing this, because you never know. So we also had an email from Marissa, and she said she'd like to know if DNA testing has advanced to the point where you can test DNA to determine whether or not a food should be eaten. Is that something that you even get into at all, Mary?
I do not.
Okay. All right. So we know that. Now let's go to the phones because we do have some calls. And we've got Jerry in Manitowoc waiting. Hi, Jerry. What's your question?
I'm wondering which of the commercially available DNA ones would give you the most information, family tree information, that sort of thing.
Which one do you usually recommend people use, Mary, first?
I usually recommend starting with Ancestry. A nice thing about Ancestry is that you can take those test results and transfer them to other companies like Family Tree DNA. But in terms of which is the best, you know, there are pros and cons with each company. So it really depends upon your situation. But I definitely ask people to start at Ancestry if they haven't tested already.
So that would be the first one to go. And then does it depend on what you're actually looking to find to what other tests you go with?
Right. So 23andMe provides some health information. It's not as much as they used to, but some people are interested in that. For example, MyHeritage has a lot of Jewish people who've tested. So if you're looking for Jewish ancestors, it's probably good to be at MyHeritage.
Okay.
You know, it just depends.
It just kind of depends. So just do a little research or contact Mary. That's what she does.
That's right.
So let's go on then to Betty in Green Bay. Hi, Betty.
Hi. So I have a kind of a weird situation. My husband had a stem cell transplant. And after he had it, he did an ancestry DNA test. And then his daughter did a test, and she did not match him, but she does match other people in his family. So I'm wondering if because his DNA was different, if that affected it. He had called Ancestry or contacted them, and they said that the saliva that you submit would not be affected by a change in your DNA structure in your bone marrow and your blood, but we're thinking it did affect it.
Okay, Mary, I'm sure you've come across this. What can you say about it?
Well, when you take a saliva sample, it's a combination of cheek cells that are sloughed off and white blood cells. And the white blood cells would be that of the donor in this instance.
Uh-huh, the stem cell donor.
Right. So I can see how that would throw things.
Right. So how is that going to affect? I mean, there's probably not a lot of our ancestors that have had that problem, but is that going to cause problems in the future when people are trying to find their backgrounds? You're going to get a lot of false positives, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It could.
Okay. Is that something that maybe genealogists could note when they're doing research that this person did have, you know, some kind of treatment that would cause the change in the DNA?
They could, mm-hmm. like in the tree, they could make that
note. That. Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you, Betty. Now you know that is affected. We did have a caller, Alex, who couldn't stay on the line, but she said that she would like to learn more about her heritage and family genealogy, but not at the expense of her private information. Do you know of any companies that offer this?
Well, ironically, Family Tree DNA is a company that you can keep your information private.
Okay,
but you in this country you need to opt out of their matching. So we know that the FBI is using the database. They're working with genetic genealogists to solve crimes. And if you don't want that to occur and you're in this country, you need to opt out of matching. Mm-hmm. So if you opt out of matching, you still would get your ethnicity information.
Okay. So now when Ancestry, I've noticed on that one that some of them say private, but they still show up in like your family tree. What does that usually mean?
In a family tree, anyone who's living will be marked private.
Okay. Got it. So that's kind of a little bit, but not a lot of security, mm-hmm. but a little bit.
Right.
Okay. All right. And we do, again, we're still running into a little bit of phone problems, but we do have a call right now. Jeff in Superior got through. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. My brother years ago put together, I want to say a couple of years ago, put together basically it's a book now where he looked through our ancestry. And what I was curious of was something he said, that we have a distant relation from the French voyageurs when they came over to North America, interbred or met native indigenous peoples from Canada, and then had offspring. So what time period is that? Because our ancestors came from Ireland, and then they met someone from Canada, they immigrated to Canada, and then met native indigenous people in Canada, and then moved to what was then, you know, territorial Minnesota territory.
Very complicated.
Yes. So in general, the autosomal DNA test oftentimes is not picking up these family stories about having native peoples in their family tree. Sometimes the Y DNA or the mitochondrial DNA is picking that up, but then it's going to have to be someone on your mother's mother's mother's, et cetera, line, or someone on your father's 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 line.
Okay.
So sometimes these native segments are being seen in the autosomal DNA, which is what Ancestry and everybody sells one of those tests. And then, of course, there's also the issue of just because you have the DNA, you know, that does not make you a native person. And, you know, the tribes don't take the DNA as evidence that you should belong. And also there's no test that will tell you which tribe you're supposed to be in. So they might sell something like that, but that's just to take advantage of people's curiosity. And you just can't do that.
Sure. Okay. Well, good to know. Thank you for your question, Jeff. Next up is Brian in Madison. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What's up?
Well, I recently took a DNA test through Ancestry, and I'm African American, or so I thought. When I got the results back, I discovered that I was 49% European. So as I try to trace this back, I was wondering if there's any advice. I want to find the original white ancestor, and as I write common cousins, I know it could be a sensitive topic. Is there any advice how to proceed?
Well, what do you think, Mary? I'm sure you've run into this before, too.
Yes. Well, I would reach out. I would look at the tree, if they have a tree, and then see if other people that also share DNA in common with you have a similar tree with similar ancestors. And we advise doing screenshots, because sometimes when you reach out to someone, they just get upset and they pull their results. So, but it is very possible to figure out who those early ancestors are. And sometimes it's more than one. Like, I have a friend who's African American, and I've worked with her, and she has quite a few European American ancestors. So it's a matter of working with those trees, reaching out to your matches, and maybe not everyone is interested in helping, but hopefully some people are interested.
Because you can get quite a few results when you just, when I was looking at mine, I was shocked. I had all kinds of people on my list that might be related that I had never heard of before. There were two of them I did, but the rest were complete strangers to me. So
right.
There's a lot of matches that can happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in this instance, I would also look for, this is probably stating the obvious, but people who have, so your matches who have roots in the Old South. So, you know, the old Confederacy.
Sure.
Because that's, of course, where slaves were held primarily. And, you know, that's always a clue.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, well, Brian, good luck with that. That's quite a mystery you have to solve there. Our guest is Mary Eberle. She is a genetic genealogist and a DNA expert. Her business is DNA Hunters, and it's a company that helps to find biological parents and relatives, and they also help clients understand their DNA test results. If you've got a question for Mary about your DNA results or tracing an ancestor, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And again, it looks like the phones are kind of working, but you can also send an email to us, and that is ideas@wpr.org. So give us a call. All the lines are open because everybody's afraid to call. So you can get in right away. We'd love to answer those calls for you. So Mary, let's get back to now Ancestry.com, which we were kind of talking about because, like I said, I did it and I've got some questions too. They give you an awful lot of information for free, but there's also some stuff that you have to get a subscription for. So what are the differences and why would somebody want a subscription?
Right. If you do a DNA test, you'll get your ethnicity estimates and you'll get your match list. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your closest 2,000 matches,
right.
Quite a few, depending upon where you're from. And then, but then if you actually want to do things with your results, like mm-hmm. let's say you want to look at the tree of those matches.
Okay.
Then you need a subscription.
Okay.
And there's a U.S. subscription and an international subscription.
Okay.
So depending upon whether your tree is going to go back into those foreign records.
Oh, so you might need both.
You might need both.
Okay. And now I've heard that some libraries offer that too through a library card.
Right. Right. That is the case where you have to go in person and mm-hmm. then you can use Ancestry at the library.
At the library. So that's a good option. So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to pay.
Right, right. Yes. And that's one of the drawbacks of Ancestry mm-hmm. is that if you want to see the trees, you have to pay them more money.
Right.
And in contrast, Family Tree DNA, you can see all the trees.
Okay. Well, that's a good to know that too. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, it looks like we've got a bunch of callers here. So let's go to Patty in Sheboygan. She got through first. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. What's your question?
My question is, at the age of 55, I found out that my dad wasn't my biological father, and I don't have a name or anything to go off of. I've done the family tree, and now I just sent in my ancestry. Do you think there's a possibility that something might match, or is it because it's a father that's hard?
No, I think there's a very good probability that you'll be able to figure things out. You know, we're looking in this kind of situation for who are the known maternal cousins, and then you're going to subtract those out, and then you're left with the cousins that are potentially from your father's side. And then you're going to look at their trees and see where the overlap is in the trees, and then because that overlap would indicate that those people are also your ancestors. And it's just a very detail-oriented, time-intensive process of analyzing the results. We're also looking for the matches of yours who match each other, because that means that they share an ancestor. And that's when you're going to be looking for that overlap in the trees. So we're building the trees back if they're not built back far enough, and then we're building them forward to find potential birth parents.
Okay. Well, good luck, Patty. Next up, we have Julie, who is calling from Menominee. Hi, Julie. What's your question?
Hi. My grandpa on my dad's side came on the orphan train to Minnesota from New York City. Mm-hmm. And we know that he came through the New York Foundling Hospital, and it took 50 years. Because they were kind of cryptic with those records, but I did finally find his birth certificate. He was at a born at a women's hospital for like unwed mothers. But his birth mom's name is Frances Braun, and she was 17. But I really do feel stuck because there's thousands of Frances Brauns in that era, or Brown, or do you know what I mean? I did wonder if I should do the Y chromosome and try and go that route.
Well, the Y chromosome won't help you because that's just what gets transmitted from fathers to sons. But the autosomal DNA should help. And I'm really glad to hear that you've tested at one company and now you've tested at a second company. And that's because it's important to fish in all of the ponds that you can fish in. And, you know, you might have had enough information just at Family Tree DNA, but I think it's really good to also be at Ancestry and to be able to look through those matches, see if any of them have that Braun surname, you know, the variations on the spelling. And we're identifying like these groups of matches. So they're called genetic networks or cousin clusters. And we are definitely able to find grandparents with the DNA. And we'll talk about that definitely at the workshop on April 6th. But it's the same process. And in some ways, it's easier because you have more known ancestors. So, you know, you've got three out of your four grandparents that you know, and you're just looking for the parents of the one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Julie, thank you very much. Next up is Carrie in Black Earth. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hi. So I was adopted, and in the last 15 months, I have found out everything I need to know because of Ancestry and 23andMe.
Wow.
I know all of my grandparents, my birth parents, I know everything. The one thing that's come up is that I have a second cousin who is Armenian, and we share not one single relative besides his father. And I don't know where to start on how to figure the mystery out. You would think in millions of people who've tested on both sides that there would be at least one shared match, and there's not. And he's a second cousin.
And they're from Armenia?
Yeah, well, his dad is from Armenia. So one of the conundrums is that the Armenian genocide, of course, they can only go back two or three generations. But we just don't have anything to go on. We have no idea how we're related.
And are you finding matches that you share with that person?
No, not
okay.
any.
And that, I think, is a reflection of who is in these databases. As we said at the top of the hour, it's primarily people of Western European descent and Northwestern in particular. And so if you end up getting into looking for people with Eastern European heritage, then you're going to have a lot fewer matches. And they're going to be more distant matches. So it gets tricky. And, you know, part of it is like waiting for enough people to test. And maybe in a year or two, someone will pop up in the match list and they will be that clue that lets you put the pieces together. But otherwise, you might be stuck, you know, if you can't build that tree back.
And it changes, like you said, as more as people add on, the more likely you'll have information. So just keep checking up on that, Carrie. And that was amazing, 15 months and she found everybody.
That's, mm-hmm, that's great.
That's great, absolutely. So just in the last couple minutes that we have left, Mary, again, tell us about your workshop that you're going to be offering soon.
Sure. So the workshop is on Saturday, April 6th through the Wisconsin Historical Society. There is a link in the show notes to the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's held here in Madison at Memorial Library on campus. And we will have four different parts to that workshop. And that will include things about how to find birth certificates. And so a little background, because maybe you don't even need DNA. Maybe the answers are all there in the vital records. But the majority of the time we'll spend looking at DNA, what kind of test to order, where to order it from, and then how to interpret the results, how to build trees. And we'll go through a couple different case studies so you can see the steps that you have to go through. You'll see that in place in those examples. So there will be handouts and the four separate talks.
It sounds like it's going to be a very good workshop. So like I said earlier, get on the Historical Society's website and sign up, because I know that last time you were on and had a workshop, it filled up really, really fast. So don't think about it too long. And Mary, we also have, yes, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to also say the workshop would be helpful not only for adoptees and others with unknown parents. It's also helpful if that unknown parent situation has happened, like with your parents mm-hmm. or your grandparents.
Oh, sure.
You know, there are some limitations to how far back it'll help, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be you who has the unknown parents.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you very much. We have been talking with Mary Eberle. She's an experienced genetic genealogist and a DNA expert. Thank you, Mary, so much for coming back to see us. And Mary's been doing her work for about 30 years, so she knows what she's doing. Her company is called DNA Hunters, and there's a link on our program note to her company also. I hope you can join us tomorrow for Garden Talk. Ben Fuda is back to talk about resilient landscaping. That's tomorrow at 11, Saturday morning at 6, or online anytime. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.